T-Mobile is the first and only wireless company to offer nationwide 5G, covering over 200 million Americans and counting. That's right, it's not just 5G in select parts or select cities. T-Mobile nationwide 5G covers over 5,000 cities and towns. And that's just the beginning. Indoor, outdoor, no signal goes farther or is more reliable than T-Mobile's 5G. Find out more about the first, largest, and only nationwide 5G network at t-mobile.com. That's t-mobile.com. Capable device required. Coverage not available in some areas. Downlink only. Some uses may require a certain plan or feature. See t-mobile.com.
Batter up.
Hello, A Pod of Their Own listeners. Welcome back to A Pod of Their Own. I am Allison McCaig, and I am joined this week, like I am every week, with by my lovely co-hosts. Wow, already can't talk. Good. Linda Cerevich. Hi, Linda.
Hey, Allison.
And Maggie Wiggin. Hi, Maggie.
Hi, Allison.
So, this is episode 40 of A Pod of Their Own, by the way, in case you were wondering. Nice, even number. For our Mets segment this week, we're really just spring training storylines. We're kind of in the, dregs of spring training now, where the games are kind of on autopilot. There's not a whole lot going on. The major news today is that Michael Conforto has been diagnosed with an oblique strain after, yeah, it's very bad.
Opening Sorry, day, I'm right
I'm here. Not going you, Allison. I'm going the world, I guess. But not you
would be booing Tim Tebow because he's going to be the opening day right fielder.
Yeah. At this
oh
rate.
My God. Why would you put that out in the universe?
Have you seen their depth?
I've already
Didn't
tweeted
they already
it.
Cut
so.
Tebow.
They did cut Tebow. Well, he's back in minor league camp.
It's yeah. true. They did cut Tebow. But yeah, might be back. yeah. So Conforto tweaked his side in a game on Saturday. Brody Van Wagenen never said exactly what play it was on, but I'm guessing it was the play where he tried to rob Emilio Bonifacio of a home run. He leapt over the tried to jump over the wall, was unsuccessful in making the catch, and seemed to hurt himself. He was removed. He wasn't removed from that game immediately, but he was removed from that game in the sixth inning and hadn't played since. And then today, and he was being sent back to New York for evaluation. And we learned today that
staying in the game for a couple more innings just to really ensure you were truly injured is very on brand for the Mets. They are coming out of the gate just ready and raring for a classic Mets season.
Yep.
So yeah, so he's been diagnosed with an oblique strain, which is pretty bad. Obliques are tricky and can keep you out for quite a while. The most notable example I can think of in a Mets context is actually Carlos Beltran had an oblique injury during his time on the Mets that kept him out for quite some time. So times sidelined with these sorts of strains can vary wildly, but if he's out for any sort of length of time, opening day currently seems pretty damn unlikely. And if he's out for any sort of time, that's bad news for the Mets outfield, which, as we alluded to, is pretty thin as far as its depth. Get ready for a lot of Jake Mariznick, folks. It's going to be a good time.
Oh, drat. I'm going to have to update my Jake Mariznick season preview, aren't I?
Perhaps.
It was such a joy to write in the first place. I'm so excited to go back and add some bad news.
I haven't done Cespedes yet because I'm waiting on if he does anything, but it doesn't seem like he's anywhere close either.
Yeah, so.
But we might, we might get the defense is good, not what you want, but some Dom Smith in the outfield. I wouldn't turn that down. I like Dom Smith. I want him to get some at bats early and get into a rhythm.
Oof. Can you imagine an outfield of Nimmo in center and JD Davis and Dom Smith on the corners? That
We're not going to have to imagine it.
That is
going to happen.
Rough. I'm sorry.
I love them, but
offensively, it's fine. But defensively,
that's
rough.
What we call the Marcus Stroman alignment. Yeah. Like, don't go anywhere near it unless you have a ground ball rate of over 46%.
Yeah, seriously. Seriously. Oh, man. Yeah, any fly ball pitchers. Luckily, the Mets don't really have fly ball pitchers on their staff heavily, although Noah Syndergaard has kind of turned into one. Noah Syndergaard's strikeout rate should be much higher than it is. But, you know, luckily the Mets don't have a lot of fly ball pitchers a la Bartolo Colon like they used to have Jason Vargas. But if they did, we'd be seeing a lot of Jake Marisnyk, that's for sure. He at least is good defensively. That's his one chop that he does bring to the table. So it's bad.
They do the alignment.
As I said in the preview, good, not great.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe Ahmed could like play halfway between the infield and the outfield.
I realize this may be my least popular opinion of many unpopular opinions I hold. But I don't, by nature, hate the idea of letting Rosario have a little time. Not playing time, not during games at this point, but, like, having him eventually see time in the outfield. Because I think, I don't know, I mean, I think he hasn't yet really gotten comfortable at short. And, like, that could be worth just seeing. But, again, like, now is not the time. It's too late, but I still think they should try it at some point.
No, yeah,
especially since Jimenez, they've been raving about his defense. So if, you know, he turns into something, he could be your shortstop of the future, and then Ahmed could be your center fielder.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. I don't hate that idea either necessarily, but you have to have something coming down the pike at shortstop. Otherwise, it's just like, instead of a lot of Jake Marisnyk, you're just getting a lot of Luis Guillorme.
Yeah.
Which but is like, not exactly, it's again, kind of the same idea.
If the Mets are stacked anywhere, it's shortstop. They have Ronnie Mauricio, they have Newton, they have Ahmed.
But that's so far down the line.
A while away.
I know.
That's the catch.
Yeah.
I don't even know, like, Jimenez doesn't even seem particularly close at this point.
Yeah. Well, Cano's been raving about him, so I don't know.
He had been on the fast track, and then, like, last season, his prospect status
he got
took
bad.
A big cliff dive because he, like, changed his swing and it looked bad. But then, like, in the fall league and this spring training, he's looked really good. So, like, I don't know, maybe he's back now, but, like, he needs some time to sort of get back to even where he was.
Yeah, that prospect shine.
Yeah, he took a tumble down the prospect rankings last year.
But he's young. He's got time.
Yep.
It just means that, like, he's not a current factor, really.
Correct. Yeah, I would say that the earliest, absolute earliest he's a factor would be like a September call-up this season. But even then, like, September call-ups are obviously a much, like, more treasured commodity now because they changed the rules this year. So you can only expand rosters by a little bit. So it's not like they can just throw him a bone if he's not performing and say, yeah, we'll take a look at this guy, especially if they're, I mean, they can do that if they're not in a race in September, but we hope that they are. So,
if they are, I feel like anything he could do that would be good enough for them to want to, bring him up for September would also be good enough to make them want to get the extra year of control going into next year.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, for sure. That if he had that good a season, like a let's bring him up maybe kind of season, then I think that would start to be a factor. But that should be our biggest problem.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, the only other thing I can kind of see, but this is clearly a pipe dream, is if Jed Lowrie were alive and he could play. He could maybe play third and you'd move McNeil back to the outfield, but I don't think that's an option either.
Would be nice if we even had a timetable on Jed Lowrie, but alas, we do not, and we never have had a timetable on Jed Lowrie. That is just a thing that has never existed.
Like, it was like a mild, like, tweak or something last year, and he was never
seen again.
Yeah, seriously. As of right now, he's still in that giant brace, and they were working on, like, getting him into a smaller brace, which is, like,
cool. Or, like, a flexible brace.
Yeah, like, Jesus Christ.
It's just, it's but the weirdest.
But doesn't that defeat the point of a brace?
I don't know.
It is the weirdest thing.
Yeah, it's bad.
And
yeah,
it just, like, absolutely, even, like, in the universe of Mets injuries, Mets who, you know, lost a young player's career permanently to Valley Fever. Of all things, this somehow still manages to rank on their weirdest injury situations list, and that I think is saying a lot.
Yeah, yeah, for real. But as things stand, I think, I mean, obviously this is a huge hit, especially considering the outfield depth is so thin. I think that optimally, I would actually play JD Davis at third base at this point. And I know that I was a staunch advocate for Davis in the outfield rather than at third. But at this point, if you're going to have also Dominic Smith out there potentially, or even like Matt Adams, like you need, I don't know. You need to spread that out a bit, in my view. And JD has shown improvement.
I think that's totally right.
JD has shown improvement at third base this spring. I haven't watched too many of the games, full disclosure, but I've heard people say that who have watched the games that he's shown improvement, and the very few innings I have watched, I've seen it. His throwing has improved. He looks a little better. I don't think you can ever really improve that range, or you can only improve it to a certain extent, but his throwing's a lot
certainly
better.
Range is something Rosario does have going for him, even when he's struggling. On defense, it's not a range problem. So if you're going to have a range issue anywhere on that infield, that's the spot to do it.
And
I mean, of course, they have a range problem everywhere else on the infield, now that I'm thinking of it.
Well, I think JD said he mostly focused on third base in the off season, so it seems like he worked really hard on it.
Yeah, so if it were up to me with the optimal, like, sans Michael Conforto alignment, I would move McNeil back to the outfield and play Jamie Davis at third base at this point.
McNeil wasn't bad. He was serviceable out there.
He seemed very natural out there. It was a really, like, it's that, like, athleticism thing where it's just, like, you can move around really well. He gets a good read on the ball. Like, it just clicked for him.
Yeah. So
he's just, I think you could put McNeil anywhere and he would be fine. He's just seriously a ball player.
Yeah, he is. He's just,
he's
going to
be like 40 years old playing first base and just killing it every night.
Yeah, that'd be cool. I'd like to see
that would be. But then where's Pete in that scenario?
If McNeil is 40 years old, then that would make Pete, like, probably retired with his billions.
Okay.
And a nice girl in Florida. It's all coming together.
Hopefully a championship.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
Yes, of course.
A ring for every finger. With the new National League DH.
There we go.
To see, but,
yeah.
I know. I hate to see it, but it's going to happen, so I'd like it to happen while the Mets have a good player for it.
Which they seemingly always do, because they suck absolute ass at roster construction, as we can now see. So,
Yasiel Puig.
Yeah, Yasiel Puig still floating out there at Mets. Sign Yasiel Puig would be good. Seems like a pretty ideal fit for when your right fielder just got hurt, and it's a borderline miracle that there's, like, a competent baseball player still available in free agency. And there is one. His name's
Yasiel Puig. He'll probably sign a one-year deal if you make it good enough.
Yep, mm-hmm. Just chuck, like, 1 year and $8 million at him, $8 to $10 million. He'd take that.
Yeah.
Just do it.
I love Puig.
Just do it.
He's better than Ryan Cornell I don't even know who else they have. Cornell, who's the other one? I feel like there's another one I'm missing.
At least once a week, I see the name Ryan Cordell, and I have literally no idea who it is. And I remind myself eventually, but this is every single week. I'm like, who the hell is Ryan Cordell?
Nobody
the Mets signed. Jesus Christ.
It was definitely another non-roster invite, and I can't remember who it is, and it's going to drive me crazy.
Well, there's Max Maroff, but he's a shortstop.
Yeah, it's clear how memorable all of these folks are.
Look, I was sick last week and watched a lot of bad baseball.
There's that guy Fargus is an outfielder. Who hit for the cycle. He's a non-roster invite.
Was it Fargus?
Fargus?
His name is literally Fargus. I made a joke in the first King of Spring Training post that he, because his first name begins with J too. Oh my God, can I hope to even pronounce it?
John Janeshwi, I think.
Janeshwi Fargus.
I think it's Janeshwi.
I apologize
that is
to
a name.
Janeshwi Fargus if I have butchered the pronunciation of your name. However, I made a joke in the first King of Spring Training post that he is actually Jason Vargas in a false mustache.
That seems, I mean, there are definitely home runs involved either way, I guess.
Yeah. So, yeah, he hit for the cycle, so he's an outfielder. And he's a non-roster invite who's actually, like...
Oh, so maybe he's the one that I was thinking of.
A veteran player.
J.D. Davis said he's been very impressive so far. Yeah. So I trust J.D.'s opinion completely.
So this Conforto injury, while bad, it felt like the other shoe dropping because it broke a string of, like, pretty good luck. The Mets had been, like, pretty much 100% healthy up until this point. Like, we had the Lugo broken pinky toe and the J.D. Davis jammed shoulder, but both of those players are back now. So, like, the Mets had been at 100% health, basically, and then this happened, so.
And this is why everybody shouldn't have been laughing at the Yankees, because this is karma.
Oh, yeah. People are always like, LOL, look at the Yankees are falling apart. Fate.
Yeah, that's like, wrong. Oh, they misdiagnosed my judge. Don't laugh!
Mets are in no position.
Yeah, and everybody was laughing, like, are you sure this isn't the Mets handling this? Like, okay.
The Mets
ha.
Are going to be a mess no matter what. We should laugh where we can. The world gives us so few, like, humorous moments. It's hard out there for a Mets fan.
Can we talk about them on the mic, mic'd up? Because that was
yes.
a delight.
Yes.
That was amazing.
A pure delight.
And I know I'm biased, but that was a delight.
That was complete. That was like I said this at the time, but like attention, Rob Manfred. This will do more to grow your sport than any three batter minimum, whatever you do.
Yeah, like I'm sure Dominic Smith got a whole bunch of followers that day.
Like, mic up the players. Like, the entire Queens Cookie Club was out here entertaining the masses. It was fantastic. Dominic Smith's mic stopped, or earpiece stopped working, so he couldn't hear anything. So he was just interjecting randomly as they were talking. I can't hear anything!
Quality content.
It was highly quality content. And then Eduardo Nunez, who's going to make the team, by the way, folks.
Oh,
he was
definitely.
He was always going to make the team, but now he's definitely making the team. And probably playing a lot of third base, actually. But yeah, so Eduardo Nunez hit a triple, and they were all just like screaming.
You're like, Nooney, go! Go, go, go! Send it! Send it!
It was so good. It was so good. All of it was so good. When Dominic Smith made fun of Jeff McNeil about like how skinny he is, oh, it was amazing.
And then JD also made fun of Dominic Smith for how skinny he is because he was like, if he had lost all the weight, you would have hit a home run.
Yeah. Oh, and then making fun of Jeff McNeil, like, eschewing the squirrel nickname, then being like,
oh,
my
yes.
name's Jeff. All right, call
my
me Jeff.
Jeff.
I'm Jeff. Amazing.
You were so good. I was so happy. Like, I was so sick, so I was home watching it. And I was just, I had, like, tears streaming down my face. It was just amazing to watch in real time. And
Worth
we can't forget
that, MLB.
Yep. Take notes, MLB. Mm-hmm. Also, if they end up, and we'll get to this in the second half of the show in greater detail, but if they end up playing the games without fans, I saw a tweet, and I forget who tweeted it, and I deeply apologize, and if we share the tweet later, I'll give you proper credit for it, but I saw a tweet that was like, MLB.TV should be free, and no blackouts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
Yep. They should do that.
Will they?
No.
No, absolutely not. But, you know, things like this, like allowing your players to show their personalities more, like this is the type of thing that like MLB should be doing and should be promoting. So, I mean, props to ESPN for doing it and do it more often. It's a lot of fun. It seems like
it worked out well for every team, not just the Mets. Like Freddie Freeman, goddamn Freddie Freeman, why is he so likable?
Like he's the best.
I know, it's so unfair. He's like Chipper Jones, but likable.
Rude.
Yeah. It's very rude, and I wish like he could just take a seat for a minute and stop being likable for 2 minutes. But that seems to be out of his realm of possibilities. Yeah. But he was fun.
The classic mic'd up
scene.
I think
they even mic'd up Plawecki, too. And of course, he didn't throw a runner out.
He didn't talk about dildos on the air.
I believe his line is still that was not his.
Yes.
Yeah.
That is still his.
He's very in that camp that it was not his.
Mm-hmm. Okay, bud. Whatever you say.
The whenever I think of mic'd up ball players, I think about when Mookie Betts was mic'd up that one time and ball went over his head and he was like, not catching this one, guys. One. Classic. Love to see it.
I'm not getting this one, fellas.
Amazing.
Oh, and Pete also said something during the All-Star game too. I forget what he said.
Yes, what did he say?
He got like really excited. Oh, because he thought he was like, nah, I didn't get him. And then he watched the replay and he goes, oh damn, I got him.
Yeah. Perfect. Amazing.
I feel like you're seeing them, like you're getting an inside look at like they're out there like talking to each other and stuff. Like you don't pick, like you know they do it, but just to see them and to like pick up like even just the other like extra layer of like nuances during the game of like, you know, positioning and, you know, McNeil had to figure out what base to throw to, and so he had to be ready and be like, oh no, on this play I'm throwing to third. So it also kind of just put you in the, like, you know, besides the entertainment factor, it kind of put you in their thought process and what they're thinking is while they're out there. They're like, they're not just chilling doing nothing. Like there's stuff turning in the brain while they're waiting for the pitch to be thrown.
Yeah, and they were jabbing at Dominic Smith for him like having his cheat sheet on his hat, and then he was like, JD Davis got a cheat sheet, if you know what I mean. And I was like, oh my god, you said that on the
poor JD.
I hope they are, in a friendly manner, never letting him live that down.
Probably not.
It's like congratulating him on his like 15 years of the MLB. Like, congratulations on your retirement. Hey, remember when you cheated?
There was an article saying that they do, like, the whole offseason, they were, like, texting him, like, trash cans and, like, gifts. And...
That is, so like, the healthiest way. I love it.
Yeah, just imagining JD Davis's messages, like, flooded with trash can emojis is, like,
well, because really it was an article about Dom, and he said JD was honest with them about it. So he said, you know, we were kind of pretty forgiving pretty quickly about it, but they were not going to let him live it down.
Yeah, of course not. You can't. So I guess other spring training storylines on the pitching side, since we talked a little bit about the position player side. In addition to Lugo being back, there are a couple other pitching storylines still outstanding. Dellin Betanzas made his spring debut finally, so he had been a little bit behind schedule because he's still like recovering from his injury from last year. It didn't go too well. He actually got clobbered, but I'm not...
It's early!
Yeah, I'm not like super freaking out about it, obviously. It's literally his first spring training appearance, so... we'll see what happens there. All they're doing is just trying to get him ready.
He said he felt good, so that's the important.
And apparently he's looked pretty bad in spring training in the past and been, like, fine during the regular season. So not worried yet. But the starting pitching, obviously we've had pretty good health luck. Knock on wood, my desk is wood, so I'm knocking on it. Pretty good health the starting pitching side, which means there's still like an active competition going on for the fifth starter slot. which they're primarily saying is between Mats and Waka, but both of those pitchers are pitching extremely well this spring, which is making the choice difficult for the Mets. They keep making noises about using like an opener.
Good the other day.
Yeah, potentially like using like an opener and maybe using Seth Lugo as an opener. But of course, like Mats and Lugo and Waka are all like, nah, we don't like that.
Yeah, Lugo was like dead set against it.
Yeah, Lugo was like, I'm old school. And I was like, buddy, you kind of just got to do what they tell you. I hate to break it to you. I know it's unfair.
Lugo
and you really
still
want to be a starter.
Yeah,
he really wants to start.
He's just unhappy in general.
Yeah, he's kind of cranky, but... You know,
we love Lugo.
I love him anyway. It's fine. So yeah, who knows what'll happen there? We may end up with a relief ace Steven Matz. Very reluctant relief ace Steven Matz. Seth Lugo and Steven Matz can be cranky in the bullpen together.
A good like guideline in life is just try to find something you love as much as the Mets love trying to put Steven Matz in the bullpen.
Seriously.
Every single year since the beginning of time.
So good.
And he's
fine.
And he's a lefty and he's like 28 or whatever. He's like, every other team on the planet must be just wondering like, what is wrong with these guys? Like he's not, you know, Clayton Kershaw, but he doesn't have to be. And he's perfectly fine. Just like,
and mostly today, like, I forgot where I saw it, but Porcello's mostly been getting lucky. Like, he's been giving up a lot of hits, just not any runs. So it's not like Porcello's been absolutely lights out where he deserves an automatic spot in the rotation.
Yes, but he makes $10 million, therefore.
Mm. Yeah, I forgot about that.
It's a great Mets
and
rule.
Former Cy Young. Yeah, former Cy Young Rick Porcello probably gives them a leg up on everybody, too.
Well, and of course, like, in true to the Mets form, they seem to have promised Michael Waka that he would be in the rotation. Or maybe, like, he seems quite certain that they said very clearly that he was going to be a starter, which I don't think that they mean it, but, like, come on, Jesus Christ, Mets. How many Devin Mesoraco corpses are you going to leave in your path?
As many as necessary.
Yeah. So...
Oh, Allison, we haven't mentioned Birdland yet.
Oh, we have not.
Your
That's
man.
True. That's true, my man.
He's been really good. Excited about him.
Yeah, I know. I think he'll be good. I mean, like, I'm not saying he's going to be, like... you know, the next coming of Mariano Rivera or anything like that. But he's like, he could be solid, like a solid middle reliever for them. And I wrote the Brad Brock season preview because of course I did, because I need to maintain the brand at all times. and I wrote that basically like the function of Brad Brock is to make sure that dudes like Jacob Rame and Daniel Zamora and Tyler Bashler are not pitching. And that's good.
Yes.
If he
that makes a
that
lot
function.
Of sense.
And I mean, if he just reproduces his Mets second half of 2019, obviously he was horrific with the Cubs, but it was a lot of walks that did him in. The Mets thought that he was tipping his pitches a little bit too, and so they fixed that, and they seemed to get his control under control, so to speak. and he's messing around with a new cutter that seems to be a very effective pitch. Well, he had the cutter before, but he wasn't really throwing it, and it was kind of an experimental pitch. And he felt like when he was struggling with the Cubs that he wasn't really in the position to be messing with the pitch, but the Mets really liked that pitch and thought it had potential. The few times he did throw it, it was effective. And he's honed it more, and it seems to be working out for him. So, you know, I think if he can just reproduce his Mets numbers again over the course of a full season, which, like, I would take that in a New York minute. It's like a 3.68 ERA, something like that. That's
oh, hell yeah.
Fine. That's beautiful. Take that from Brad Brock all day. And Justin Wilson looks really good this spring. So, like,
yes, he does.
Obviously, where there might be some, you know, healthy skepticism when it comes to the likes of Edwin Diaz, Jairys Familia, Dellin Betanzas being healthy. Like, those are question marks, and it's not great, but I do at least feel good about Justin Wilson and Brad Brock. So,
and I feel like they don't have awful splits, so I don't think the three batter minimum is going to hurt them too much, knocking on wood as I say that.
Justin Wilson definitely
seem, yeah, they seem better positioned than they would have been a couple years ago, for sure.
Yeah, yes.
With Blevin.
Right. But I think it's, I hesitate to say anything about the bullpen as a strength, but I think that is a strength of theirs, just not being super dependent on specific relievers in that way.
Yeah. Even Gizelman's looked really good.
Yeah. I really hope, I just like, the thing about Gizelman is I'm nervous because this is the freaking Mets. I'm nervous that they're gonna option Gizelman and keep somebody like fucking Walker Lockett on the roster. Ugh. Because he's out of options and Gizelman has an option left and the Mets are stupid.
Are you kidding?
Like, I'm just saying, I don't know if they're gonna do it. I have no, like, I've heard nothing of the sort, but it's just the type of shit they would do and it makes me nervous. And they keep pumping, like, Walker Lockett pitched like whatever it was, like 3 scoreless innings the other day, and the Mets keep like hyping that up, and I'm like, oh my god, please no, please stop telling us Walker Lockett is good.
Yeah, stop making Walker Lockett happen. It's not gonna happen.
Protects us. If anything protects us from that, it's gonna be the fact that they think he can start, which is even worse. I mean, I do think having the option on my god, I just forgot his name, Zellman. Whew. Spring training for me too, folks. I think it's nice to have that because if they are getting really good performance out of other people who actually deserve to be there, and then maybe they have some injury in the rotation and he might spend a little time in AAA, like getting stretched out or something to potentially fill that role. It's good to have, because the Mets find themselves very frequently, I feel like, having to cut these guys rather than being able to send them down because they haven't managed the roster well and they end up losing out on players who are kind of borderline, but like you still need to keep some of those around.
Yeah, like they're important pieces. You need guys like that.
Yeah, yeah,
for sure.
Although David Peterson has also apparently been looking good so far. I haven't seen him, but so far from everything I've heard that he looks decent. So yeah, I don't know if we're going
to
see him.
He's the closest thing the Mets have to like a guy with upside.
Yeah. Really? although Peterson, I mean, like obviously, and this was always coming, and isn't any indication of how the Mets feel about him as a prospect in the future. But Peterson was among the cuts, the first round of cuts that the Mets made. I have the list of it here. So Peterson was cut along with Andrés Giménez and Thomas Cipucki and Jordan Humphreys, Franklin Quilome, who's still kind of recovering from Tommy John, as is Drew Smith, who we have like literally not seen at all. I don't know like what's up with Drew Smith. He seems to be like
no.
Not here. Like, I don't know.
I mean, he's been there, but I don't know if he's pitched. Like, I've definitely seen him in camp, but I don't know why he. No,
that I know of. So that's.
I mean, a lot of these guys. At least it makes sense. Like, they're absolutely starting the season in AAA. Like, let them get to the camp where they're going to see a lot more at bats, where they can, you know, work on more stuff instead of just sort of sitting around and taking a couple swings every game while the major leaguers are actually seeing all the playing time and getting all the attention.
Right. And of course the major league players have to start like amping up their, like they can't like come out after the fifth inning every day. They have to start like getting ready to play full length games and stuff. So, remaining cuts, Matt Blackham, Steven Nogasek, Nick Rumbelow, Francisco Rios, Austin Bossert, Dave Rodriguez, and Tim Tebow, as we mentioned.
Not Tebow!
No. Oh no! Our prospect
spring training, chugging right along. The Conforto news is bad, but everything else seems okay for now. We'll see.
For now.
For now. I'm just really looking forward to the season. A little bit more than a little over 2 weeks. Seems good.
Yeah.
Who knows if they'll be fans of the games, but or if the season will actually start on time. MLB's insisting it will, but yeah, I guess that provides the perfect transition into our baseball segment, which we will talk about coronavirus and its impact on baseball. So stay tuned for that.
Hey, while you're listening to this podcast, T-Mobile was busy building the largest 5G network in America. All right, well, they didn't do it all during this one podcast. They spent years improving their network to be ready for the future wireless, 5G. Well, the future is here, and it's nationwide. T-Mobile's 5G network is in over 5,000 cities, covering more than 200 million Americans. It's 5G service you can actually use, even in places where other signals just get blocked, like your living room or a bank vault. Okay, well, probably not the last one. Now's the time you get ahead of the 5G game. Why not pick the first, largest, and only nationwide 5G network? Go to t-mobile.com. That's t-mobile.com. Capable device required. Coverage not available in some areas. Downlink only. Some uses may require a certain plan or feature. See t-mobile.com.
Hello, this is Jesse David Fox. I'm a senior editor at Vulture, and I host the podcast Good One, a podcast about jokes. It's a podcast about, well, jokes. Every week, I sit down with a comedian, comedy writer, or director. We listen to one of their jokes and figure out how it all came together.
I don't sit down with a pen and a pad and physically write down everything. That's not my style.
It turns out, comedians take jokes pretty seriously.
I like all jokes, okay? That's what I do. That's what I live for. There's really nothing else I care about.
Yeah.
It's all very revealing. What did you sort of learn from this? What was your takeaway?
Nothing. I'm not a smart person.
Good One from Vulture and the Vox Media Podcast Network. Subscribe for free on Apple Podcasts or on your favorite podcast app. You do know how to use the podcast app, right?
Oh, what a great question, Jesse David Fox.
And we are back. We alluded to the fact that the season may start without fans, and that's because obviously most of our listenership is probably aware of the outbreak of coronavirus that is rapidly reaching pandemic levels around the world, and it has now hit the U.S. and number of cases is slowly rising. Baseball leagues in other countries, namely Japan and South Korea, that were particularly hit hard by the coronavirus, have already taken measures to, you know, limit the spread of the virus by limiting, you know, crowds. So they played in Japan. They played the rest of their spring training without any fans. And the Korean Baseball League, I believe, pushed its season back.
Yeah.
Pushed its opening day back. And sports, obviously baseball isn't as big in Italy as it is in Japan or Korea, but in Italy, all the soccer games, which obviously soccer's a big sport in Italy, all the soccer games are currently being played without fans. So this is beginning to seriously impact professional sports. So far, the only measure that Major League Baseball has taken has been to limit locker room access to the media. They have not yet indicated the media. The league has said that the season will start on time, and as far as they're concerned, right now there are going to be fans at the games, which I saw a lot of. Complaining on the part of the baseball media about their lack of access, which, I mean, I get it, especially when they're not doing the same thing for the fans, when they're not, like, you know, closing the stadiums to fans, but I think they should just do both at this point.
Yeah. Like, this just feels like they're doing something just to do something, because they didn't do it until the NHL was the first one to do it. And, like, I don't think anybody else was talking about it until the NHL said, nope. So, like, everybody just showed up one day and they're like, no, you can't go into the locker room anymore. Like, it was literally that day. And then, and then all of a sudden, then, like, everybody, like, did it the next day. So I feel like they're like, well, they're doing something, so now we have to do something, and this is the only thing we can think of. So it just seemed like a half-baked, half measure that doesn't
I mean,
really
it's certainly
seem
like they frame it to be kind of about the general like public health.
Yeah.
And it's the thing is like is a very partial measure that will kind of protect the players. And
yeah.
that, you know, to be fair to MLB, that is their priority.
Their
product. I mean, should it be? Probably not. But like that's where they're looking first. And like it's a free solution to that. I mean, not solution, but it's like it doesn't cost them anything to do except, you know, goodwill from the media, which, and I get it. Like, I get the media feeling like, well, this is just a partial measure and it hurts us more than it hurts anyone else. And that's fair. But also, like, it should be one of many partial measures because there's probably no full measure coming. Like, they're not going to be canceling the season. Knock on wood. Like, it doesn't seem like it would be very likely. We hope it's not likely. Yeah, I guess the thing is the media and whoever else is impacted by little movements like this needs to kind of just suck it up because there's going to be a lot of those trying to prevent the big things from happening. But I also point out that like the teams are taking measures to protect their employees, the players. They're not taking measures to protect the employees, the vendors, the ticket takers, the security guys, like It's only the big names that are getting the 6 feet away kind of treatment, which
and
I
the
guess
players
you'd expect.
Are still traveling. They're still, you know, the players aren't under like quarantine in their clubhouses. So I don't know what blocking them from 20 people at most is really doing. Like
they do well, the players have private travel, so like that,
yeah,
you know, it's
but
not like they're
still
going
in
to airports. And,
they're
yeah.
still, I don't know, like it just, and like we said, they're not protecting the vendors. And like right now, the Flyers and the Blue Jackets, because their cities recommended that you don't go to like outings of more than, I think the Philadelphia was 5,000 and in Columbus it was 1,000. And so
we can all go to Rays games is what you're saying.
Yes. But they were saying, if you feel sick, stay home. And they're like, just use common sense where, you know, we've taken measures to keep the arena clean, but you're still inviting people to go. Like, to get to a game, I have to take the train. So I could be exposed in the train when normally I wouldn't. Or I could be a carrier and wouldn't know it. And I'm exposing people at the arena, or I'm exposing people on the train, or I'm exposing people walking down the street. Like, you're still, even if you feel perfectly fine, you could still be exposing people. So just saying, you know, we recommend that you don't come. What measure is that? Like, how is that helping anything?
Right. And like, the public health experts have been saying that it takes on average with this particular virus. And we're still learning. Oh, that's the other thing is like,
yeah,
we're still learning a lot about this virus. It's new, obviously. That's why they keep calling it the novel coronavirus and why there's no vaccine against it, et cetera, et cetera. So like, we're learning things all the time. And just because these numbers change doesn't mean that scientists don't know what they're doing. It means that they're learning new things. But right now, as of now, what we know about this virus is that it takes on average about 5 days for symptoms to show up between when you are infected and when you show symptoms, if you show symptoms at all. Some people don't show any.
Yeah.
So it's not about, like, I think that there's a lot of young people who like are like, oh, you know, like I'm young and healthy, so I'm not worried about it. It's not about you. It's about other people who are, it's about the 82-year-old man who bought the ticket next to you, who you may be infected.
And also, you're just giving teams free passes to discriminate against the disabled, the elderly, the they even said, oh, if you're immunocompromised, you know, don't come, basically. And it's like, well, how is that okay? Like, just because, you know, they have to take extra precautions, now they're no longer welcome in your arena? Like,
I mean, I do hate to say it, though, but honestly, Linda, that's like, anyone who's immunocompromised should not be in an arena right now. Like,
well,
that's
no,
the, but I know it feels very, like, discriminatory, but, like, from a public health perspective, it's the kind of thing that you just, it's icky, but it's important because just, it's one of the only ways. We're also, I mean, it's not even just about, like, keeping yourself healthy and keeping from, like, transmitting to other people. We're also looking at, like, overwhelming medical resources happening soon. Like, it's not happening now, but it's, if you look at kind of what's going on in Italy, that is the next step. So you're just talking about, like, staying home where there are fewer accidents, where there are fewer other, like, it's still, hello, flu season is still happening. Like,
as I can attest.
So it's, I mean, it's just such a complicated, like, Linda was saying, Allison was saying, like, ever-changing situation right now, that's why you kind of have to do all the little things. And, you know, groups like the media kind of need to just back up on this and also do all of the little things, because that's kind of all we have.
Yeah. Well, also, I mean, I have no proof of this, but it also feels like these sports are kind of testing, like, before they make, like, a big move of canceling games or saying, you know, keeping the fans home, like, trying little things first and seeing if it helps or seeing what the response is before taking the more drastic measures. That's just, my feeling on it. I don't know if it's right or not, but I mean,
baseball is lucky in a lot of ways that their season is in the position it is, because they can kind of look around at what other sports are doing and also reflect the most up-to-date knowledge that we have about, you know, outbreaks and transmission to kind of make a more informed choice. Other, you know, hockey's flying blind.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
The only people that I know right now are the Sharks, because I forget what, it's like the Santa Clara county, like, absolutely forbade any public gatherings, so the Sharks will not be playing in front of fans. So that's the only people that I know of right now that have been, you know, have that affect them, because no other team has followed suit right now. They've just had their recommendations of, if you're sick, don't come in, or don't go.
Right. And I think that, but, I mean, Maggie mentioned Italy, and I think that Italy and South Korea provide two, like, kind of polar opposite case examples of how this is going down and how it might go down here if we don't act. Because I tweeted this, but I think that what is difficult for people to understand is the concept of exponential growth when it comes to outbreaks like this, because you'll see the numbers and they seem really small in the beginning and they don't seem like they're growing that fast. But that's when, like, it's doubling every day. And if you just take the doubling of the doubling of the doubling of the doubling, it becomes really big, really fast. And that's what happened in
Italy. We don't have a baseline for the U.S. yet. We're not,
no.
The increases that we're seeing, some of that is the spread of the disease, but most of it is just finding people who've been sick for a while.
Just,
and those numbers can increase even faster. Like, it's, yeah, test everybody, please.
It's just testable. But yeah, so, like, as you, Italy was, and I'm not blaming the country or saying that their government handled it poorly necessarily, but they were woefully unprepared when it came to testing response, when it came to monitoring the disease, as opposed to South Korea, who intervened very early when there were very few confirmed cases and even fewer confirmed deaths. There were only like 9 deaths in Korea by the time they were already like massively testing everyone and monitoring everyone. And they were able to kind of curb the spread of the disease pretty early. And now you're starting to see the number of new cases actually decrease every day, as opposed to increase every day, like it has been doing in the United States for some time. And yeah, part of it, like Maggie said, is just that we're testing more people. And so we're finding more cases because we're testing more people. But the U.S. still really, really does not have the capacity to test as much as they should be testing. I know for a fact, full disclosure, I work for a health department. I don't know how much I'd be able to share on air. I can't really share too much of like what's going on in that capacity. But I know for a fact that, and it's not the fault of the state government, but I know for a fact that states are woefully underprepared for the amount of testing they have to do. And part of that is the federal government responding to this the way that they have responded. I'm not going to make this a politics podcast right now, but, you know, saying it's no big deal and bailing out oil companies is not the correct response.
But a payroll tax, Allison. the median American will get 10 extra dollars a week. It's amazing. Wow. But I will say, you know what? It's a political issue.
Yes.
This is not like politicizing a public health disaster. That is a de facto political event. Like, there's nothing, like, you can't politicize it because by its mere existence, it is political. But,
and also kind of,
I work at a school of public health, so I am angry.
Yeah,
like,
and very busy. We're so tired, you guys.
Oh, I'm sure. But to like piggyback off of that a little bit, like, the stick to sports people, as you can see, sports are life. Like, this is happening to all of us. You can't separate sports from life, as we're seeing. And now the stick to sports people are probably like, well, now I'm not going to be able to go to a game. Blah, 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 blah. Like, now that they're inconvenienced, now it's like, But, you know, this is how a lot of people feel all the time when you scream stick to sports. No, you can't separate sports from life. You can't separate sports from the coronavirus. You can't separate sports from racism. You can't separate sports from sexism, because it's all part of life. And I think, I hope people's eyes are open to this more, that, you know, they can bring us together. We're all going through this together. We're all trying to figure it out together. But, you know, it's affecting all of us in all walks of life. And sports are gonna be a big part of that. And I doubt their eyes are gonna be open to this, but, you know, maybe a little bit. Can you see how sticking to sports is impossible?
Yep.
Well, so
I feel like, you know, before we leave this topic, I feel like, as you can already tell, we have, you know, two people who work in public health in some capacity or another on this podcast who are very on our soapboxes about this. And that's kind of why we made it the topic this week, because it's really important. And like, science and public health are important, and, you know, people should be aware of it. And sometimes it touches our sports and we can't separate it.
I do want to say, and this is like, I don't even know if this counts as sports anymore, but like, so this is a major problem and needs, you know, everybody, like, all hands on deck to help take care of it. But if you are a perfectly healthy, like, middle-aged or younger adult who is going out and like hoarding hundreds of rolls of toilet paper, like, calm down.
Yeah, don't do that.
Put the toilet paper down, pick up the phone, and call your grandma and make sure that she has hand sanitizer, and like, offer to go to like help her order groceries online. Like take yourself out of it. If you're not in a high risk group, I mean, still do things to avoid spreading it, but like, the disaster mindset, like, take yourself out of it and like, figure out who in your community needs that support, 'cause it's probably not you.
Yep.
No.
Yep,
and
absolutely.
Also, just to kind of, you know, as, you know, people like, you know, kind of look down on libraries, but people have, like, colleges are closing, that they have to go online. Like, we need to stay open to give people access to computers. People who have to work from home, like, they're all coming in the library now. And, like, if we run out of Purell, we're like, we've been trying to order Purell, you know, wipes, just to, you know, wipe down the computers and everything, and it's all sold out. And, you know, a lot of people come through our doors every day. So again, the hoarding is just, it's not helping. Like, we still live in a society, people. And
live in a society.
Yeah, but it's this society. It's not
can
a
we
good
just
one.
Just look out for our fellow man and for people who might be a little less fortunate. That's all. Please.
And yeah. If they decide to close games to fans or cancel them altogether, God forbid, just use your sadness and disappointment for something useful. Like, don't make this they're so unfair and overreacting to everything. Like, if it comes down to that, it's for a reason, y'all. And I know it sucks, and it sucks in so many ways. But as awful and restrictive as the new rules feel when it comes to, like, keeping people safe from a disease, please do it. Yep. Listen to your friendly neighborhood epidemiologist.
Seriously. It's what kills me. They're like, oh, it doesn't affect me. I'm not immunocompromised. Like, so you're basically saying you don't care about the people who are. Like, that's what you're telling me when you say
that. Also, get your vaccines.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, God.
Seriously.
In all seriousness, if you haven't gotten a flu shot, it's absolutely worth getting it now, because if you did get the flu, you might not be able to get an ICU bed if you develop pneumonia, because the U.S. has like a quarter of the number of ICU beds they're going to need. Sorry. No worries. It's all fine here. Everybody's great.
Actually, I did just get the flu shot Sunday because I had the flu, and they wouldn't, my job would not let me back without a doctor's note basically saying I don't have corona. And so I had to go to urgent care to get a doctor's note while I'm there. She's like, you might want to get the flu shot while you're here. So I can attest to that.
If they tell you to pick up your kid because they've got a runny nose, just do it if you can. And I know, like, everybody's bosses are terrible, and capitalism's the worst, and it's just, like, making everything 10 times more difficult than it needs to be. But, like, if you can work from home, if you have this way to do that, just do it. Like, do as much as you can, folks. When we'll get through it. We will. Probably.
Yeah. The thing about
months with many, many dead people.
Like we were saying, the thing about these public health interventions is they only work if you do them when things don't seem that bad yet. If things are already seeming bad and you're like, oh shit, now I gotta like stock up on hand sanitizer and do all these things, and like now I gotta like start washing my hands, which if you weren't washing your hands before, what's wrong with you?
Why?
Like, it's
please
already
wash
too late.
Your hands.
Yeah, oh God.
At that point, it's already too late. Like, we need to.
Just
I know
wash
that the,
them.
I know that these measures that MLB might take, and like the social distancing stuff and working from home, I know it's like a big like impact on people's lives. I get it, and I get that it seems disproportionate to the threat. But I promise you, it's not, because we're doing
it's
these
not.
Things so that it doesn't get bad. We're doing it preemptively.
And frankly, the U.S. The state of U.S. government makes it impossible to do it. So anything that we're dealing with at this point is already a half measure.
Yep. Just a quick, like, few more, like, PSA type things. Obviously, I already said, wash your damn hands. And that is, obviously, hand sanitizer is good, but it's not a substitute for washing your hands. Wash your hands. It only use hand sanitizer when soap and water are not available. Soap and water is the most effective thing you can do against this for yourself. Wash
so, like, if you're walking out of the subway, use the hand sanitizer. But then as soon as you get to your destination, whatever it may be, wash your hands.
Wash your hands.
Is appropriate usage of the two modes of cleaning.
Wait, was it you, Allison, who tweeted that you can wash your hands to meet the mask?
Yes, it was me.
It was Allison. She's internet famous now.
It was me. I made a tweet that went, like, kind of small-time viral. I wouldn't call it viral. Especially, I would avoid using the word viral right now. but kind of, like, it went small-time, like, spread over the internet. That, you know, there's that graphic going around of like the various steps of washing your hands, and people have been saying you have to like scrub your hands for at least 20 seconds because that's the most effective way. And so there's been graphics going around about like various like 20 second snippets of songs and like the lyrics underneath each step of washing your hands. So I adapted it to be Meet the Mets and it went pretty viral. So yeah, just sing like the first verse of Meet the Mets while you're washing your hands, and that's how long you gotta wash your hands. So do that.
And it does work very well. This virus is extremely vulnerable to soap.
Yes, it actually
I meant like the hand washing. The song also works really well. I have been doing it as well. I just mean like it's not one of those things where like really washing my hands is going to prevent the global pandemic. It's like, well, yeah, actually.
Kinda.
It's a really powerful thing to do.
Yeah, like... people misunderstand because they think, oh, antibacterial soap won't do anything against a virus because it's antibacterial. It's not the antibacterial properties of the soap, folks. It's literally the soap properties of the soap. Because
yeah, you don't need actually antibacterial soap for most situations.
The virus is covered in lipids, and when you use soap, you break those down and you can destroy the coat of the virus. So
melty little virus.
Soap. It's kind of puny. Yeah, the virus is kind of like puny and vulnerable to soap. So wash your hands. If you are not feeling well in any sort of capacity, regardless of whether you think it might be COVID-19. COVID-19, by the way, is the illness, not the virus. The virus is the novel coronavirus, aka SARS-CoV-2, is the virus. COVID-19, when people refer to that, that is the illness. It's kind of like the relationship between HIV and AIDS. HIV is the virus, AIDS is the illness. So COVID, even if you don't suspect that it's COVID-19, still stay home.
Yes.
Stay home if you feel sick, if you can. COVID-19, what sets COVID-19 apart from things like just a cold, for example, are especially fever, shortness of breath, and a dry cough. Runny nose and sneezing. Don't sneeze shame people, because sneezing is actually not a big part of COVID-19.
Runny nose, though, is for children. They're not seeing runny nose with adult infections, but they are seeing it with pediatric infections. So that's, watch kids. If they are runny nose and fever, then like you should definitely consider them potentially carriers of something, or just sick, and like keep them home and let them get that shit out of their system.
As we mentioned, the most vulnerable people for this are older folks. So call your grandparents, make sure they're okay. For some reason, this particular, and coronaviruses in general, so coronaviruses are a family of viruses. A coronavirus was also responsible for SARS. You may or may not be old enough to remember that, but that was a thing a while back. For some reason, coronaviruses as a whole are not particularly like prone to infecting children, although children have been known to get sick from them, just not as bad as something like the regular flu. So,
which can be tricky because they don't seem sick enough to have to stay home, but then they're walking around and infecting people
and infecting
who
others,
potentially precisely. Are going to get very sick.
So it's older people where the mortality rate is the highest. It is immunocompromised folks. It is actually older men are the most vulnerable group. For whatever reason, we were hypothesizing in the chat as to why this might be. Men are way more, the mortality rate for men for this virus is much higher than women. And we think it might
65%
be
65% higher.
Yes. A huge gap. And it can't,
yikes.
And we don't entirely know why. Obviously men like tending to not seek medical attention as soon as they should is a factor. The fact that men smoke more often is a factor, but that alone doesn't explain away this huge gap. And we don't really, it could be epidemiological factors, as in we're just not like, you know, sample bias and all of that. But we do think that there is a real difference here. And we're not exactly sure what it is, but scientists will eventually hopefully figure it out. So yeah, older men especially.
Stay tuned for the peer review study hitting your bookshelves in 2022.
Yeah, seriously. and a vaccine, which will eventually come out, but takes a lot of time.
2021.
takes a lot of time because they have to develop the vaccine. Then they have to test the vaccine to make sure it is safe. So these things take time. But, you know, get the vaccine once it's out, guys. Actually get vaccinated.
Get all your vaccines. Go get them. Get them right now. They're all still good. They'll all still help.
Yeah, seriously. So yeah, that concludes our science PSA. I felt like, yeah, I was kind of like, guys, for the baseball topic this week, I think we need to get out our soapboxes a little bit about coronavirus.
Baseball.
Use my small platform and my PhD street cred for whatever I can use it for to help people. So yeah, guys, like, listen to public health experts, please. And don't get too mad when they might, you know, cancel baseball games or have them played without fans. Just put up with it. It sucks. It's not great, but it's important. So
yep. It won't be forever.
Nope.
We'll
get through it.
But even though coronavirus is not a good time, we will conclude our show like we always do with walk-off wins, where each of us talks about what's making us happy this week, baseball-related or otherwise. Maggie, I see that you have a baseball-related walk-off win, so tell me about it.
I haven't looked, but I'm pretty sure this is my first baseball walk-off win in, like, 3 months. But my baseball walk-off win is that Brandon Nimmo looks great.
Yeah,
it looks so healthy and so happy, and he's just his Brandon Nimmo self. And you know, he had such a strong end his season last year that there was every reason to expect he would be healthy. But with backs and necks, you just never know. And so I'm just every time I tune in or catch a highlight or just kind of read a recap, I'm tickled pink that Brandon Nimmo seems to be well and truly healed up, and I think he's gonna have a great year. So that's my walk-off win. Yay, Brandon.
Yeah, and take that, all Brandon Nimmo is a fourth outfielder, people.
Ew.
Yeah, fourth outfielder on a good team.
Yeah.
Well, he's the second outfielder, maybe the first outfielder. Like the only outfielder on a mediocre team. So there.
Linda, what is your walk-off win for this week?
My walk-off win was Saturday in the city.
Yay!
We had
Did
a
you
little...
wash your hands?
I had Purell. Because I was in Grand Central. And I was getting over a cold and, well, the flu, actually, and I was getting dirty looks on the train every time I coughed. I'm like, look, I'm Purelling, I swear. But we had a small little Mason Avenue gathering at the Rangers game. It was Allison and Michael's first Rangers game.
Yes, it was my first hockey game, period.
Yes, and after the first period, they played pretty bad, then they lost.
Yeah, it was not great.
But, you know, it's my first time meeting Thomas and Vaz, and so it was nice, like putting faces to these people that I, like, talk to every day, almost, and, you know, it's always fun seeing you guys, and I'm sorry that you saw a bad game.
It's all right.
But I still had fun. And yeah, like, clearly we weren't scared to go to the city, and I was actually kind of shocked at how many people were out in the city too.
Yeah, a lot of people were out and about.
I was gonna say, it didn't seem like, you know, people were, you know, staying away or anything. The arena was packed.
New York doesn't really do that. That's not
That's not our style.
That's not how it's gonna go.
The train was packed going down. I was actually kind of surprised. I didn't know what to expect, really, honestly. But
I think it'll probably look different next weekend, but, like, that's next weekend.
Yeah, but, you know, I mean, it wasn't his fault. I'm going to put that out there right now. But, you know, they ended up pulling their rookie goalie, and then they put Henrik in. So I'm kind of sad because I'm pretty sure this is going to be the last time I'm ever going to see Henrik Lundqvist in person. So I was kind of happy, like, even though it was because they were playing bad that they had to put him in. you know, it's kind of, I feel kind of good that at least I got to see him one last time. And we got to chant his name, and I'm glad he heard it, because I don't think he's been happy for a while. And, you know, I want him to know he's still beloved in New York, and, you know, everything he's done has meant a lot, even though, you know, we have this new goalie now that we all love, but, you know, that Henrik's not forgotten. So that made me happy. And so that's kind of what I took away from it, even if they did lose and they played pretty bad. But, you know, I had good company, and that actually made it, that made it fun too, I think.
Yeah, I agree. It was my first ever hockey game. So Michael and I went, and we had never been to a hockey game before. So like the novelty in and of itself was fun, even if the result was not exactly what we wanted. But it was fun to have my first hockey game be like a rivalry game. So that was fun because they were playing the Devils. And like, I guess if you would like, if I had to like pick a hockey team from like knowing nothing, the Devils are like my most natural choice because I'm from New Jersey. But pretty much everyone I know that likes hockey are all Rangers fans, including all my friends and family. So because even though I'm from New Jersey, both sides of my family are native New Yorkers. So so I was rooting for the Rangers regardless. So that was. It was fun getting to see the like rivalry atmosphere in the Garden. You definitely felt that. We went to the bar beforehand, and there was like a lot of mingling of Rangers and Devils fans at the bar. It was kind of like a reminiscent of a Mets Yankees like Subway Series type game. And I got to see like live hockey, which to me, I mean, I've never seen a full hockey game on TV, but I've watched like plenty of snippets of it, especially when I happen to be at bars and there's like playoff hockey on TV or whatever. But like, it's definitely a lot more fun in person than it is on TV, in my opinion, as someone who's not a hockey person. I really enjoyed watching it in person. I really liked all the, because one of the differences between like the atmosphere of a hockey game and the atmosphere of a baseball game is just like how like the players like skate around the ice before the game starts, and there's this big like the New York Rangers like it's a lot of like fanfare that like doesn't exist.
It's
like,
so dramatic. I love it.
I was like, this is so dramatic, and I
and like you said, the referees got hype music. Yeah.
I was like, this is the real ump show. Like, the referees even get to skate around the ice on their own and get cheered by everyone. I was like, imagine if the umpires did this in baseball.
The referees got cheered?
Yeah.
Cheered?
They skate around the ice and they call their names and everything. Like, they get introductions like the players. And I was like, what is happening? Can you imagine if they did this in baseball for the umpires? Pretty sure that, like, beer cans would get thrown at them.
Oh, there would be an actual riot.
Like, yeah. I take this for granted. So, like, seeing it for, like, somebody who's never experienced it, I'm like, oh, yeah, you're right. They do get hype music.
I literally turned to, like, Linda and Thomas and Vaz, and I was like, this is the real ump show right here. Like, people think baseball is an ump show. This is the ump show.
Right. Nothing beats like before a hockey game. It is so dramatic.
It's incredibly dramatic.
Like, yeah, like, it's just, it's something, and, like, they've gotten really good at, like, putting patterns on the ice, too.
Yeah, that was cool, so, too. I really enjoyed that.
So, like, yeah, like, they have, like, entire scenes now playing on the ice, and I'm like, this is so awesome.
Yeah, they, like, have a light show, and there's, like, the like, New York skyline and everything, yeah! Like, on the ice. It's kind of like, it's almost like how they try to do this in baseball games with the big scoreboard, but, like, it's the whole ice rink, so it's like pretty cool. So I like really liked that.
The effect
is
cool.
It's definitely a change of pace, which like I'm always gonna be a person like I think I'm always like baseball's the sport I grew up with, so it's what I'm used to, and like I am always gonna enjoy the more just like laid back and chill like pace of baseball and the cadence of a baseball game, but getting to experience something a little different in the form of hockey was like really a really fun like novel change. Like I enjoyed it a lot, so I had fun. I will definitely go back at some point, maybe when the prices aren't quite as high.
Give it a couple weeks, Allison. They're gonna come right down.
True. True story. So yeah, That is also my walk-off win. And I had we had a really nice weekend in the city as a whole. Like, we spent the whole weekend in the city, hung out with Michael's sister and his brother-in-law, and it was just a fun time. The day after the hockey game, we spent a whole afternoon in the barcade, which probably, given the current state of public health, is not a good thing to touch all these like arcade games that other people have been touching. But, you know, they also had Purell out like by every machine, so that's good. But that was it was really fun, and I just had a good weekend in the city overall. It was really nice. So that is my walk-off win. But yeah, so as far as upcoming shows, next week we will have Renee from Purple Row on to talk. You guys seem to enjoy our Cubs mingling with Cup of Cubby Blue that we do on occasion with the folks over in Cubs Land. So we're going to do another version of that and mingle with our folks over in Rockies Land to talk Mets Rockies, to talk Nolan Arenado, all that good stuff. So that'll be next week on the pod. And then shortly after that, the season will start and we'll be back on our regular once a week rotation. So hooray, more shows in your feed, more Mets things to talk about. That'll be a good thing. So we're really looking forward to that. But in the meantime, you can go to amazingavenue.com, check out all of our fantastic content. We're doing spring training game threads. We are doing news. We are doing season previews still. So check all of that out. You can follow the site on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at Amazing Avenue. You can follow the show on Twitter at A Pod of Their Own. You can follow each of us on Twitter. I am at Petite PhD. Where are you, Linda?
At Linda Sorovich.
And you, Maggie?
At Maggie162.
You can follow all of us. You can also subscribe to the show, Amazing Avenue Audio. Get all of our wonderful podcasts. Please rate and review the show on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. It really helps other people find the show. The original intro and outro music to this podcast is by Bunga. Let's go, Mets. And don't forget, there is no crying in podcasting.